Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this is an ongoing investigation into the transformation that's happening on this planet. And we are part of it, and you're part of it if you're listening. Tonight, there's someone who's very much a part of that transformation, a kind of overseer of that. He's written a book called Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Casey Pole Shift. His name is Marshall Masters. Welcome, Marshall, to New Realities.
It's a pleasure to be here.
For such an upbeat guy, your book's a little bit of a shocker, you know, Planet X, the end of the world, the pole shifts, the Edgar Casey stuff. How do you stay so up with all the things that you say are going to happen?
Well, you know, Mahatma Gandhi said it best. He said, if it were not for my sense of humor a long time ago, I would have committed suicide. And he's a pretty wise guy. I mean, you know, you got to think about it. He took on an empire and kicked their tatas. But I don't see it as an end of the world.
No.
I see it as an end of life as we know it. But that's already happening.
I guess you're right about that somehow.
That's already happening. I see this in a broader context of an evolutionary event. I'm a catastrophism researcher. Mm-hmm. And so my take on this is very secular. I balance both, you know, the spiritual and science together because I don't have to worry about elbowing up to a funding trough. I'm just an independent guy. I do my own books, and I do this 7 days a week. And I have been doing this for over a decade.
Well, let's go.
And so I see an evolutionary event more than anything else.
It is an evolutionary event, and there is definitely something about to happen, and it is happening. But, you know, you outline some very serious events that are going on, very serious sort of. Well, let's start. Where should we start? Should we start with Planet X as you see it coming into our solar system, creating the havoc that you're saying it will create? This returns every about 3,600 years, this planet?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And every time it comes, it actually does some major upheavals, right? So the last time it was here was when?
Well, it's according to the ancient Egyptian accounts in the Colburn Bible we published. This is an ancient wisdom text that was finally released in 1992 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. And it's dates back to the book was called The Great Book. It's what's left over of it. And the Great Book was written by the Egyptians after the Exodus, pretty much as their own 9/11 report. You know, what they were trying to figure out was how come the God of the Hebrews could kick their pantheon of gods off the pedestal, so to speak.
Right.
Is
there actually an Egyptian book commenting on that event? Because I thought there were. There wasn't any text referring to the Hebrews' escape.
Oh, no. There's in the Colburn Bible, there is a very exquisite account. It really gives you the Egyptian view of what happened, particularly at the Red Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Egyptians say is that that is where Pharaoh died. Mm-hmm. He was leading the charge. And that the waters had parted, that he had led the military in. What happened with the host, it was a mixture of Hebrews and Egyptians that were leaving with them. The reason that was given that was that they were trying to run after and bring the Hebrews back because they had a more powerful god than the Egyptian gods. But that's not an explanation for the behavior, because what Pharaoh was doing was literally slaughtering his way through the back of the host because he wanted to get forward, get up to where Moses was at. And then the waters came in, and that was the end of it. Now, what they also report was after that, after the Hebrews had made the crossing and were into the Sinai, they were then invaded from the south and had a really awful time of it. But what they also explain is that this was really not in the Hebrew account, which is in the Torah, and that's really the history of a people and their right to exist.
Right. But how do you know the
culture? You know, so, you know, they were just, what they were saying was that this was, as far as they could understand, I mean, this is a regional, if not a global event. And what they do is they attribute the 10 plagues of Exodus to Planet X, or what other people know as Nibiru, mm-hmm. or they called it the destroyer, which is the same word that is used by the Hebrews, the destroyer. And depending on which translation of the Bible you buy today, it will either say the word destroyer or something else. And so the more modern translations, which there have really been in the younger Bibles that are being done, there's a real heavy emphasis is going deep into the root of the words and as they're translating them. And so that's where you'll see destroyer used more often, but they refer to it. And there's a lot of warning in the Torah and the Bible in general about Planet X.
What chapter in Exodus? I have one of these old Bibles. Where in Exodus they actually mention the destroyer? Do you have an actual?
Off the top of my head, I do not have that. We publish a book by Greg Jenner called Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection. Mm-hmm. Why the Colburn Bible is the Rosetta Stone of Planet X. In that book, it's the nice thing about that book, it's a one-day read. It's what I call a "Is This My Cup of Tea" read. And it'll tie together all of the things. It answers exactly that question you have, but also pulls together a lot of other sources of both secular and non-secular prophecy. And you can read that in a day, and it's the kind of thing that after you've finished reading that, you can decide whether you want to continue exploring this topic or not. I don't have those particular passages at hand right now to read for you.
That's okay. So you're saying the Colburn Bible is really goes back to Egyptian documents?
Right. And there's two parts of it. The first part was written after the Exodus and by the Egyptians, and the second part was written by the Celts about 30 years after the death of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so, as a matter of fact, it is it contains an excellent biographical section on Jesus, where it's obvious that the biographer actually met them.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of those things that Glastonbury Abbey was burned,
right,
razed to the ground, and the priests, the Celtic priests who survived that, they took all of this into hiding, and then they created a compilation of what was left of the Glastonbury Abbey fire. And they kept that in safekeeping in Scotland, and it was translated over the years from the ancient tongues on up. And then finally it was in Queen's English. We got it. The edition that we sell, we updated it with just punctuation, according to Chicago Guide. And we added a numbering system to it, so it's a citation system to it, an alphabetical index. So we added value that way, but otherwise it's the text that remained. And it came close to destruction a few times. The text was being stored in London around the time of the Blitz. But it wasn't a Nazi bomb that would have taken it out. Actually, it was a housewife who discovered what was going on, and she was a fundamentalist and said it was heretical and she wanted to burn it, which really goes to the reason why the Colburn, like a lot of ancient manuscripts that are just now coming out, were kept in hiding for so long, because there were people that just wanted to destroy these texts for their own fear-based beliefs.
So people can get the Colburn Bible through your website, is that it?
Yes, at colburn.com, and they can also get it on Amazon.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble.
But getting back to Planet X, so you're saying that it was Planet X that came in when Moses was leaving, brought on the plagues, which somehow Moses was able to manipulate the energies coming from Planet X, or maybe he was in touch with the beings that were part of that, and used that to create a nation, to create a whole new way of thinking, actually, kind of the monotheistic religion. But is that true? Are you saying this Planet X was involved in the creation of Judaism?
Yeah. I think that there was, it was an enabling mechanism.
But how did Moses, how was he able to communicate so well and use that energy coming from the planet for his advantage?
Well, first off, the Egyptians had a tremendous wealth of knowledge on this object, which according to the Egyptians, it caused Noah's flood and the sinking of Atlantis as well in different flybys. So they had a lot of history on it. Now, Moses, all right, was a high priest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very highly placed in the family. And, you know, he had access to this information. And he would have known the signs. He would have known that the object was going to return. Now, as the old saying goes, in chaos is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And in a normal period of quiescence, all right, relatively speaking, then, you know, no way could he throw down on the Egyptian family and manage to survive that and be successful in getting the Hebrews out. But on the other hand, if you're having a huge natural catastrophe going on and the military is tied down trying to keep that going, then now you've got wiggle room, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You can make a break for it. I think he did that. And this is my only This is my own personal belief, mm-hmm. is that there was some ancient technology. You look at the Ark of the Covenant, and if you take a technical look at the Ark of the Covenant, it's a radiation shield,
mm-hmm.
all right? It was, they had gold, which was on the outside. Now, and in the Colburn Bible, the Egyptians confirmed they just were giving the Hebrews gold and gems like crazy, okay? They were just giving them this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had plenty of gold. Well, they lined the outside of the ark with gold, which that makes sense if it's a ceremonial thing. But then they lined it on the inside. And then the kind of wood that they used to build the ark was a perfect dielectric. All right. And also is reported that the people who would carry the ark would come down with what we know today as radiation illnesses. So,
well, it's also reported that only the Nubians with the dark skin could actually touch the ark. There's something in darker skin that protects from radiation.
That's right. So I think what happened, the reason why Pharaoh went across the Red Sea in what was a very desperate maneuver, slaughtered. I mean, he's according to the Colburn Bible accounts from the ancient Egyptians, I mean, they took out a good chunk of the people that were on there. And the reason why was that when their army started to come onto the Red Sea crossing, the host that was well behind Moses, these people panicked and they just left everything where it was. They abandoned their carts and whatever, and they were just running. So now you have this, you know, mush of a seabed. And on top of that, now you got to get around, you know, carts, animals, luggage, everything that's thrown in front of you. Terrible carnage then ensued. Well, why would Pharaoh go to such great lengths? I think it was because Moses walked out of Egypt with something that was a state secret, and right. that was an enabling mechanism.
Well, some people say it was actually kept in the Great Pyramid in what is the Grand Gallery. And if you ever go to the Great Pyramid, you can see it just opens up inside to this huge kind of slanted atrium in a way. It's mm-hmm. an amazing structure. So, and there seems to be these ridges along the wall where something probably slid up and down. So that's one people think Moses took something that pyramid out with him, and that could be what Pharaoh was after.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. And I look at Moses as a tragic figure.
You do.
I see him as a tragic figure because, you know, think about it. You know, it's a Hatfields and McCoys kind of a thing on one hand, but it's really more like the American Civil War, where families were divided, where brothers faced each other on the field of battle for their beliefs. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing that I find is that nowhere is it ever mentioned the actual name of Pharaoh. There's a lot of speculation. but it's never mentioned anywhere. It's not mentioned in the Torah, and it's not mentioned in the Kolbrin Bible either.
Well, who do you
think? It is an intentional omission. I think it was an agreement between Moses and his family that they would not be dishonored by their name being remembered in those accounts.
Well, who do you think the Pharaoh was?
Wouldn't even want to show to guess on it.
Well, if it's easy to trace back, if it's 3,600 years ago, I'm sure some Egyptologist knows what dynasty and what pharaoh was ruling, you know. Some people say, well, Velikovsky, I know you get into Velikovsky, but he also wrote a very interesting book called Ramses II, where he says the dynasties of Egypt are off by 700 years, and Ramses II was really a contemporary of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon. So I don't know what that's really all about, but there's more to Middle Eastern history than has been told to us in a very simple way, you know. So, but if we get back to this idea of this destroyer, so, okay, Planet X is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Moses is leading the Israelites out of Egypt. And is there any other reports of Planet X besides that major event in Egypt? Is there any other reports around the world where, at that time?
There are other reports. If you're looking at the Great Deluge, there are hundreds of folklore accounts. We find a lot of folklore on our website, yowza.com, YOWUSA.com. There's the Jenner files, and these are free to the public. It's an online flip book. And I mean, you're going to see a lot of these accounts. It was one of the things that really stunned me as a researcher. And I'll tell you how I got into all of this in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is the same way most everyone else does. You walk straight backwards into it. But,
right.
You know, it's like, you know, I didn't sit there when I was, you know, when I was sitting there at 13, today I'm going to be a man and, yeah, I want to talk about the end of life as we know it. No, I didn't. That was not my bar mitzvah speech. But,
right.
Well, you know, you don't do that. But for me, it was flying to Russia. You know, when Russia, after the fall of the Soviet Union, shortly after that, I started a travel business to Russia, specializing in groups. And I would go every December, January, and I'd be flying over. And on the way back, it was always day. Going over was night. But on the way back, I remember the first polar flight because I was Moscow to San Francisco on Aeroflot. Went over the North Pole, and I was stunned. It was so beautiful. It was the first time in my life I ever saw blue ice. You know, I was raised in Arizona. To me, snow was something you went to 7-Eleven. They put it in a cone with some syrup. How do you do?
Right.
And here I'm, you know, my face was glued to the window for hours. Just couldn't get enough of it. And it was beautiful, unbroken, expansive. And over a period of 8 years of making these winter flights to do my business, I watched the North Pole slowly degrade, all right, until finally the last flight in 98, I saw a North Pole that looked like the busted windshield of a car in a junkyard. It was all cracked up everywhere. And it was a steady progression. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying, okay, I hear everybody with this global warming doesn't exist. And some say it does. And there's a big fight about it. I think I am going to believe my lying eyes. I have seen it myself. And that was when I said, I need to figure this out. I got together with some other folks, some Mensa, and we started researching just simply climate change. We started looking at that. And what we came up with when we finally published our results a year later was that it's principally driven by solar activity. That anthropomorphic causes, you know, is, you see, an inconvenient truth by Al Gore. I call it an inconvenient omission because he tags the whole thing on anthropomorphic causes. Man-made. We did this. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put all of the CO2 that we put up into the atmosphere and put it in perspective, you're talking about one really good-sized volcano fart, okay?
Right. Right.
So, yeah, we're not making things any better. And we are causing acid rain, which is going straight at the heart of the food chain. We're doing some nasty stuff. But what's driving the weather is solar. We made that announcement back in, 2000, and we were promptly ridiculed. Now I see more scientists going to that and saying, yes, it's principally solar driven. And the solar data substantiates that. Now, I want to point out to your listeners that NASA has just announced that they underestimated what is going to be the force of the coming solar maximum for 2012-2013. There's a sun cycle, and the maximum is when it's really going to start being popping off. And they're saying that the conditions are existing similar to those that existed during the great solar storm of 1859. They give you...
What happened in 1859? Of course, we didn't have the electronics we have now.
That's right. We didn't have it. At that time, we're talking about, we're just stringing for, teletype. Or not teletype, excuse me,
telegraph, you mean?
Telegraph, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, that was just a few years out, both in Europe and in America. During that solar storm, the Earth was impacted so heavily that in Hawaii, they were seeing the aurora borealis. Stop and think about that. The aurora borealis in Hawaii. Whoa. But all over Europe and the United States, mm-hmm. All right, where all these telegraph wires were running, they had flash fires all over the place because shorts. Now, what NASA is saying is that we're going to have another solar storm of 1859. It'll happen in 2013 or thereabouts. That's what they're concerned about. Except that we're talking about trillions of dollars of infrastructure going to be impacted. And, I remember in 2008, Dr. Michio Kaku, all right, and he's an evangelizer of science. I think the man is really brilliant. He's one of my favorite folks out there because he's a real straight shooter. Dr. Michio Kaku is his own man, and he doesn't have to suck up to anybody to elbow his way to a funding trough.
All right.
And so he's honest with people. And in 2008, he said, hey, we were off by a factor of 20. He did that on Fox. The Fox News entertainer, because there's no more news reporters anymore, the news entertainer was saying, well, that's all Y2K, millennium bug nonsense. And blew it off, which was just humiliating for Dr. Kaku.
Mm-hmm. But let's get back to Planet X. And mm-hmm. and you said, and the deluge was a separate time than Moses leaving. It was an earlier appearance.
That's right.
So my initial question there, was there any other historic documents at the time that Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, whenever that was, to Planet X at other places on the planet, or any other documents besides the Old Testament?
You have old wisdom text and folklore, uh-huh. and Greg Jenner documents all of this, both in the book Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection, but also you can read the Jenner report on my site, YOWUSA.com. I mean, it'll take you hours and hours to pour through it. There's that much.
All right. So now let's get to what is coming up for us. And, of course, you go through it in very good detail in Crossing the Cusp, and you use this crop circle on the cover, which I happen to be in, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this, but we'll also talk about this tomorrow night on your program. When is your program on?
Our program will be offline when we record. It's a research, because you were in the crop circle in Avebury 2008.
And, yes, I was. It was actually the first crop circle I was in.
And so, I mean, it's someone who has boots on the ground as a researcher. I just boom, I got to interview you as a researcher. And so my other show, Cut to the Chase, is what I do that. And in a live format, it's really kind of difficult because you have to juggle everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's offline, we can stop and I can, you know, scratch my head and ask you something and then we can pick it up again.
Okay. But we'll go through that on your show. But on this show, let's really get into Planet X. What's coming and how do you know it's coming and what we can do if it really is coming about it, you know?
Right. Well, all right. In a nutshell, Planet X is an object in orbit around our sun. And it's now widely maintained that amongst Planet X researchers that it's really a mini constellation. It's a small brown dwarf, which is an unborn sun, if you will. It's an object with sufficient mass to ignite like our sun did, except it doesn't have the fuel necessary to keep the furnace going. Mm-hmm. So a brown dwarf, which is a relatively new kind of sun, and astronomers are now in the last few years are trying to learn a lot more about them and look for them around the galaxy. And they just, when they die off, it's like, think of it as a charcoal briquette in the barbecue. You know, you get it lit and then it banks off and, you know, finally after a while ebbs out and dies. Mm-hmm. Except on a cosmic scale, this is a very, very long process.
Right.
And so this is a brown dwarf with number of satellites, Earths, planets and moons.
Oh, really?
That are encircled around it.
This is traveling towards our solar system with its little family of planets and moons?
Yeah. And it's approaching from the south. It's steeply inclined. And a term that'll be helpful for your listeners as a visual reference is the ecliptic.
Yes.
The ecliptic is, imagine you're standing in the middle of the sun, kind of a hot place, right?
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
All right. Now, and you're holding a hula hoop around your waist. Mm-hmm. And then just take that hula hoop and stretch it all the way out in every direction to the 12 signs of the zodiac. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is the ecliptic. Northern skies are above it, southern skies below it. This object is coming in from the southern skies. And right now it's still beyond the orbit of Pluto. Mm-hmm. And so
Wait, let me just back up one second. Isn't it strange that there is such a thing as an ecliptic, which means that basically all the planets are in a plane, considering the depth and height that space could provide? They're all sort of in a straight line out. I mean, I think that's pretty odd until I met Nassim Harmim, who explained that, which is a function of black hole dynamics. Things seem to flatten when there's black hole energetics involved, and that's what is in the center of the sun. So that's his reason why things flatten out.
Yeah, and when we have comets that come in like Hale-Bopp, mm-hmm. and they have what you might call a polar orbit, instead of from going from side to side, they're going top to bottom or bottom to top. All right. Mm-hmm. What we know about it is that when an object is going around, our planets are going around the sun, very, very stable orbits, because we're within a degree or two of the ecliptic, except for Pluto, which is much more extreme. But the thing that you want to keep in mind is, we're going around, we have the precession of the equinox, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. And everybody knows, we're going into the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. But what astronomers will tell you is that we're going into the age of Aquarius, but we're doing it backwards and at an ever increasing pace. Now, if we were in a solar system with just one sun, that doesn't make sense. But if you're in a solar system with two suns, now it begins to make sense. Well, because the vast majority of solar systems in the galaxy are multiple sun, two or more. So a single sun is actually, about 10% or so.
Wait, so our sun's, companion is this brown dwarf, you're saying?
Right, and it's in a 3,600-year orbit, And, you know, your listeners might have heard of the work of Zachariah Sitchin,
yeah.
his translation of the Sumerian texts.
Yeah.
And that was how we really got to the Colburn Bible, was we were trying to find, is there, you know, and someone else talking about the same object aside from the Sumerians as translated by Sitchin.
Right.
And Sitchin, a brilliant man. I mean, I did an exclusive interview with him in 2003.
Well, you're one of the rare people who were able to do that. I'd love to hear
yes.
that.
Well, it was 2003 was the Planet X non-event scare. Mm-hmm. A gentleman by the name of Hazelwood did a book called Blindsided. Now, he never did any original research and would admit that openly to people. All right, so he was just a grapevine guy and a great marketer. And what he did was he actually plagiarized a lot of information from Nancy Leader, who runs a website called Zeta Talk, who channels
Zeta
extraterrestrials.
Talk. Yeah, right. I do not agree with a lot of what Nancy, or that website says as far as the Zetas and all that. But
yeah, I've known Nancy for a lot of time, and I love her. We don't agree on our science mm-hmm. all that often, but to me, Nancy, you know, she's a good trooper. She does it for love.
Yeah,
and it's the reason why in 2003 the non-event that was whipped up, you know, it was every Planet X was going to be here in 2003 of July of 2003, and then guacamole would hit the fan, and oh my God. God, we used to get letters from people and we'd just want to cry after reading them because you could see people struggling to sound rational. But, you know, the horror and the fear was dripping through between the lines and it was painful for us. And it was a time when our site statistics were just smoking. All right.
Well, let's get back.
You know, Sitchin came to us.
Yeah.
We interviewed him and Sitchin agreed with us. We didn't see anything that said, okay, this object is approaching. You know, this is actually going to happen. We didn't see that. Sitchin didn't see that. And that's the reason why we did the interview.
I see. So anyway, let's get back to what's going to happen now. So you're saying, okay, right now, Planet X or this brown dwarf and its family of planets and moons are outside the orbit of Pluto, but it's well on its way to our neighborhood, as is depicted in this June 15, 2008 crop circle, which I mm-hmm. take to be authentic, is its extraterrestrial origins, because you know, when you're on the ground there, there's no way it could have the consistency and flow. And particularly this crop circle, which is huge.
Yeah, almost the size of four soccer fields.
I know. It was huge to walk around that. It was exhausting. And I got lost in some of these little hieroglyphs off to the side there and felt very strange. I'll go into it more in your program. But I can't wait. Okay. I'll give you the whole story tomorrow. But anyway, because I really am concerned with Planet X and to see if it really is a reality. So when do you expect it?
Okay. Well, you know, what we've been telling people is now in the book Crossing the Cusp, and the way that the Avebury 2008 formation lays it out is that in the first part of December 2012, we're going to have a naked eye view of this object. And it's interesting. We're following in this debate Comet Elenin right now. And I'm sure you've heard of Comet Elenin.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's the ancient Hopi. I really have a great fondness for the Hopi people. I grew up in Arizona. So you grew up around the Hopi and, you know, you go out fishing and hunting or whatever. And they were there and always good, kind, solid, salt of the earth people. And the Hopi have had a long tradition of building a special lodge to see a specific alignment in the sky, and particularly what's happening with Venus. The ancients were always interested in Venus. And so what they're looking for will occur in December 2012. There's a lot of convergence besides the Maya. So the point here is that
okay,
what
so we're
they
gonna
tell us
we're
is that
see the brown dwarf coming, I mean, at least through telescope in December 2012? Is this what you're saying?
No, December 2012, you're going to be standing out in your yard, pointing up at the sky and pooping your collective pants with everyone else.
Because we're going to see this. So when will we first notice it coming into our solar system?
Well, I use what I call the 7x35 threshold. Uh-huh. And 7x35 is the most popular size of binocular out there. You can get them for $30, $40. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, sporting events, bird watching and whatever. When people can start observing the objects with a 7x35 is when the governments are going to come out and level with us. Until then, they're going to sit on it.
And when will that be? What do you have an estimated date?
I would say that sometime in, you know, in 2012. And it might be earlier, might be later, but you know, these objects, this object is coming in. It's in a comet-like orbit. It's in a very fast mover. Once it does come in and it starts arcing to its point of perihelion, where it's closest to the sun, it really, really whips around. Think about.
It picks up speed as it gets closer to the sun. It picks up. So sometime around the beginning, let's say, or sometime in 2012, this is going to make its appearance, and it's going to keep accelerating its pace as it gets closer to the Earth. And what effects will that have on our beautiful planet?
Well, what I'm saying in Crossing the Cusp is that it is going to trigger an Edgar Cayce pole shift. Now, there's a lot of pole shift areas. There's two different kinds of shifts people have. There's a geophysical, and then there's a geomagnetic, all right?
Right.
And we're already having the magnetic shift. I mean, they're having to renumber runways.
Is that already from the influence of the brown dwarf?
I believe it is. I also believe that we have a 1-2 that's going on. The Hopi have a prophecy, and it's always, you know, for 10 years, I always was interested in this prophecy, never could figure out why. And it's the Blue Kachina.
Right, right? I've heard about
it. The Blue Star, the Blue Kachina. Well, what the Hopi tells us is that first we see the Blue Kachina, then we see the Red Kachina.
Okay.
Elenin is the Blue Kachina. Planet X. Nibiru is the Red Kachina. We're going to see Elenin, you know, in August, September timeframe.
Can you just read? Elenin is not the brown dwarf, or it is the blue?
No, it's a harbinger.
That's a comet?
When we see it, it's a comet. Elenin is a relatively young comet. And got a huge, huge coma. This thing is like the size of a gas giant with its coma. So I believe that it's having electrical interactions with the sun and also with Planet X. And, you know, think of it. You know, we tend to think of it like, you know, if it's a pool table and you got a cue ball and that's all that's left on the table is the eight ball. You know, it's a two-ball solution. Now, that's not the way the universe is working here. It's more like busting the rack.
Okay, so we're
not really going to know what's happening until we're getting along into it. But we're already seeing things right now. I mean, tell me something. We got right now as you and I talk, we got a volcano in Iceland that's closing down air traffic in Europe.
Right.
We got the Mississippi flooding that is so bad that they're actually busting levees and destroying small towns so they can save big cities, because they know if they don't do that, what the flooding could do to New Orleans would make Katrina look like a cakewalk.
Right.
And then on top of that, Joplin. What? These poor people in Joplin get slammed, and there's more of it, and so now we have these tornado swarms.
But
we
on top
earth
of that,
changes
we,
that
have,
are happening.
We have radiation polluting the whole Pacific Basin from Japan to California. We have radiation.
Yeah.
So, and that's, of course, our creation, you know, the man-made creation. But,
GE is better at evading taxes than they are at building nuclear reactors.
Well, anyway, we have a lot of problems, and this thing is coming. So first we're going to see a comet, which is sort of a traveling companion of the brown dwarf, which you say is Nibiru. Are there beings on this planet or in some of the planets or the sun? Are there entities like Zachariah Sitchin says there is? You know that?
Well, Zachariah Sitchin says that. My studies didn't focus that heavy on it, but everything that I've come across in my studies has a consistent pattern that, yes, that there are two planets in the mini constellation that are inhabited. One is inhabited by the Anunnaki, and the other is by a slave species on the other planet.
Okay, so let me just get this scenario right. First, in, like, say, June, the comet, this huge comet, will make its appearance, and then, like, a few months later, we'll start to see the brown dwarf, Nibiru, and how many planets and moons will be traveling with it into our solar system?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you're going to count moons and planets. You know, think about Pluto just got demoted, all right? So these are arbitrary definitions. But, you know, Comet Elenin will be visible August, September, and it'll be in the early morning hours. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have to see it then. You'll have to get up a little early to go see it. Mm-hmm. Although the interesting thing about Comet Elenin is that its trajectory is changing. And this is not uncommon with comets. They're very unstable, fast movers. Although this one is very close to the ecliptic, which it should be more stable than the ones that are like Hale-Bopp. Hale-Bopp, for example, when it was flying back out, it crossed, came to its point of perihelion, closest point to the sun, and then as it was whipping out back to aphelion, its furthest distance, then it came within one Venusian distance, mm-hmm. more or less, of Jupiter, mm-hmm. you know, the distance between Venus and the sun. And that was enough to shorten its orbital duration by 40%, mm-hmm. and that's huge. So these objects they're interacting with each other.
Okay.
It's just not simple Newtonian. I mean, there's right. the electrical universe theory, and
if you use the map that was laid out, which is sort of is a map of the June 15th, 2008. Crop circle in Avebury, that's a sort of scenario, because in that crop circle, the planets are directly aligned to where they'll be on December 21st, 2012. There seems to be some sort of thing entering enter the orbit of Pluto. And then, of course, that was then added to on June 22nd. And somebody's telling us something here. And
I think Avebury was, it took me 2 years
yeah.
to decode Avebury. And I will tell you that a lot of that time was because there's a tremendous amount of disinformation in this topic. Mm. And it's not cranks and kids just having fun.
It's
government.
Wants to know. They don't even... You know, when I was over there, there was a helicopter that came really low down, and not on this crop circle, but the 888 crop circle, as if they were checking it out themselves for the first time. So,
mm-hmm.
and of course they'll ridicule it. The papers will ridicule the people that, and it was a huge party in the field when I was there, but you know, you won't get any, newspaper acknowledging that it even happened pretty much. So,
well, the media is tightly controlled. Now, I will tell you that most of the disinformation I have seen, and it wasn't in 2008, all right, I published video analysis of disclosure videos. We broke the story on the South Pole Telescope, mm-hmm. which to us was the perfect instrument at the perfect place to observe Planet X coming up from the southern skies.
Mm-hmm.
There were disclosure videos that were released, and we authenticated them because of the way they were suppressed and because of the way we were attacked. I am telling you, it's like, you know, from the 1930s movies, you know, the two pirate ships lining up and broadsiding each other. They just
Marshall, I'm sorry. We only have 10 minutes, and I really want to get to, like, what's happening. I mean, so people can be at least aware.
Right.
So Planet X, or this brown dwarf, or Nibiru, whatever you want to call it, will be entering our solar system, and tell people what they can do, but what the effects of this, you know, other totally out there heavenly body will do and what we can do about it.
Okay, Alan. First thing is just read the headlines. Look what's happening to our world.
Mm-hmm.
This is insane. Remember with all the earthquakes, the media would say, it's just everything business as usual. There's not more than before. It's just that we're reporting them better. They don't say that anymore because people aren't going to buy that nonsense. It's starting to happen. It's like contractions of a woman giving birth, and it's just going to keep coming and coming and coming. My immediate concern as a researcher is that whatever comes, and there are different scenarios, don't fall into the trap of one-ism to say, what's that one thing that's going to get my tuchus off the couch to go do something?
Right.
Now's the time for preparation and planning.
Tell us the preparation. Just tell us, what do we need to do?
Okay. First off, sit down and think about everything you eat on a routine basis in your house. And then buy a six-month supply of it.
And do what with it? What am I going to do with that?
Stockpile it and cash it. Stockpile it and cash it.
You're saying an underground shelter with at least 6 months' worth of food.
I would say yes.
Which they've been doing up in Washington for the last 20 years, you know?
I can tell you that, you know, right now the people I talk to that build off-the-grid electrical systems.
Yeah.
Right now are going at absolutely can-to-can't pace 7 days a week, and they are building underground bunkers for wealthy people. We're talking about bunkers that are $500,000 on up, luxury condominiums under the ground, completely self-sustained.
And you're saying, okay, so
people are building these. The people who have money are building them like crazy.
Okay, so, okay, now, okay, but, okay, I don't want to lose the thread here, but okay, so around December, we're going to see this thing in our sky. You know, I was just watching that television show, The Event, last night, and that very thing happened. There was this other planet or sun appearing in the sky of the Earth, you know?
That's right. People are, you know, it's getting out. The consciousness and the awareness are getting out there. But what's more important, Alan, what's so important right now is not to intellectualize all of that. What's so important is right now, if you go out to your Walmart or your Costco or wherever, you're going to be able to buy basic staples, beans, rice, noodles, whatever, okay? And whatever you can buy today, if you could buy whatever you're going to pay for a 25-pound sack of beans today,
yeah,
6 months from now, the same money will buy you 1 pound of beans. So, in other words, right now, while people have some discretionary income, use that. Get these supplies. I have a book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. That is the book that if you want a strategy for what you need to start doing right now.
So we need six months.
For people who don't have money, a lot of money to do it, that's the book you want to get.
Okay, so you're saying Planet X is coming, the brown dwarf, and it's going to do, what will it do to our environment when it's that close? Will it create, you know, volcanoes, earthquakes? What will it actually do in your estimation?
All of the above.
And
I mean,
more.
This is the worst that's going to happen is that this comes in. Remember the ecliptic we defined and a perihelion. That's the closest distance to the sun for an object. We call it the kill zone. Is between perihelion and crossing the ecliptic. When this object is, and according to Avebury, it says it's going to reach perihelion first, then cross the ecliptic. When it's going through this kill zone, the sun is going to go nuts. We're going to see sprites. We're going to have solar storms. And this is going to just be devastating. You want to see a super worst case scenario. Not that I think it would get to that point. Go watch the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. All right.
So it's going to last 6 months. It's going to pass by the Earth. It's going to zip around the sun and head back out.
And things will calm down. And when this is over, whoever's left standing is going to be the most important human population in the history of our species.
Okay, so you're saying that's going to probably take 6 months?
No, this is going to be a slow motion train wreck lasting over a year.
Okay, over a year.
It's not going to be one big bada bing. It's going to be a slow motion train wreck. It's going to speed up, reach a point where we have a pole shift, where I believe that the lithosphere is going to shift around a few degrees, as Edgar Cayce said. I do not believe the Earth is going to stop spinning or flip around or do that. I believe that what we're going to see is what Edgar Cayce predicted.
Off by many years. I think he said 97 or this would happen, right?
Human perception on a cosmic scale is a speck of sand on the tuchus of a flea somewhere between tick and tock, okay?
Okay. So you're saying he saw the couple future. Of years. But he saw
it doesn't, the years, you're looking forward in time. You know, Yoda in Star Wars, the future's difficult. It's always moving.
So what should we first, you're saying changes are already happening and we should get some high-powered telescopes, binoculars. But what are the first signs that you think will tell us, hey, this Planet X is on its way?
You're just going to see more of what's already happening right now.
Right.
Does the Earth seem normal to you, Alan?
Well, it never did,
Yeah. I understand. But it's actually, this is going back to 1940. But we're going to start seeing it. I would say to your folks, by the time you see Comet Elenin, and if you haven't stockpiled, then whatever's left of your savings is going to have to make up the difference. If you want to lose this last window of opportunity, I've been talking about this topic since 1999. There was a long period when we had a luxury of time to dabble at arm's length. That time's gone. Mm-hmm. That time's gone, Alan. So if people really want to do it, my website, youwusa.com, 90% of the content is free because my thing is survival. I just want people to survive. That's it.
Okay. You're saying the best way to survive is get a 6 month or probably even a year of food supplies, an underground shelter, and enough water, of course. And
That's right.
Do we need to be underground when this whole thing happens?
You're going to have to be able to go to ground, all right?
That?
And so that's because we're going to have solar radiation storms. You got to remember, there's a solar storm is in two parts. First part is the radiation. It's the flare. Mm-hmm. It gets here at the speed of light, approximately 8 minutes. So there is no warning. That storm lasts for about a half hour or so. Mm-hmm. And if you're standing out and a storm actually has the Earth in the crosshairs, if we're not in the crosshairs, there for the grace of God go we. But if we're in the crosshairs, you are the poodle in the microwave if you don't have some dirt, steel, and concrete over your head. And it's got to be directly over your head. This doesn't come in sideways. It's just going to come straight down. So one of the things in Planet X forecast, a little trick I tell people, is you take your cell phone. When you're going to work, the mall, shopping, whatever you do, walk around the building, see how many bars of reception you get. Then go inside the building and find places where ideally you get to zero bars of reception. Your cell phone is a good radiation detector for this purpose. And then remember those zero bar parts so that if you're in the mall when a storm hits, and you're going to know it's going to hit because it's that day the Earth stood still, everything's just going to stop.
Wow.
Okay. And when that happens, you're going to know your zero bar locations, wherever you're at work, at the mall, in the school or whatever, and you get there and you sit there for a half hour. And you could always say there's a better way to do it and get 2 miles underground. My philosophy is it's the little things that matter. And if you do enough little things, it becomes a big advantage.
Right. Well, this is what are you doing now? We're almost out of time, but what are you doing now to keep up with this study of Planet X?
We are actually on this every day. This is what I do day in, day out. Right now, we're really studying Comet Elenin because I believe it is the blue star Kachina. of Hopi prophecy. All right. And it's also, we have other researchers that are finding corollaries to the Book of Enoch. Mm-hmm. And to other ancient texts. Mm-hmm. And so what will happen is what these ancient texts are telling us is that this comet, all right, is when this thing's visible, that's it. That's the harbinger sign. That's when we know game over.
Okay, but the ETs, because I think somehow they're connected to the crop circles, they must be aware of this. Where do they play into the whole thing, the alien situation?
There's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Uh-huh. All right. And the ones that are talking to us through the crop circles, they're really wanting us to survive and to evolve as a benign and peaceful spacefaring species. And that is our destiny. That is what the Creator intends for us. If we get derailed by elites and other agendas, we're going to wind up slaves for more generations than we want to think about. And that is really, it's a matter of choice as to where we're going to go with this. Mm-hmm. But the people that are going to get through this, what I talk about in Crossing the Cusp is who gets through it? It's the meek, but not for the reasons that you would think. And the other thing is, as a researcher, because, you know, I'm always two steps ahead of my audience. The thing for me is I want to find a way to mitigate this damage. Okay. Yeah. And that's what I talk about in Crossing the Cusp. It's the last chapter with the intention vortex. This is how we can come together and we can change it. You know, for those that like Star Trek, remember the Kobayashi Maru and how Kirk.
Yeah, just give us a little bit of how we can collectively change it. Just give us a little brief overview of that.
What I did was I said, here we have spiritual capability. And here we have all of this scientific and media capability. If we could marry all of this, we could create a global intention and focus it in a very sharp aim, rifle it towards the object. Now, you can't move a planet, all right? We shouldn't set our sights that high. But if it has an unstable moon and we can alter the orbit of the unstable moon, the moon will have... It'll do the leverage. It'll do the job for us so that we could very well affect the outcome where instead of if we're on a, say, a scale of 1 to 10, we're looking at having an 8, maybe we could, with an intention vortex, mitigate that to a 5. That's a lot of lives saved.
Well, I think we should continue this conversation as things progress. Your book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Casey Pole Shift. Your website again is?
YOWUSA.com.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. I've been talking to Marshall Masters, and I'll be on your radio show. Give us a little overview of your radio shows.
Cut to the Chase. I've been doing it since 2004. It's a podcast, and I use it. It's my research. It's how I get out and meet people and get information. Like yourself, someone who's a ground researcher, mm-hmm. people who publish books. And you can find that at cttcradio.com.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Marshall, for your work. In a way, it's good news and bad. I mean, it's great that you know what's going on, but we'll see if it really does happen. I mean, I don't know what to make of it, really.
Trust yourself. Trust yourself. The most important truth, Alan, is the truth that resonates within you. And the only way that happens is when you and you alone put it there.
Thank you. That's a great way to end it. I'm going to close with this song, Masters of Light, Duke Williams and the Extremes. And this has been Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Marshall.
Masters of Light, we're the universal soldier into the night. The world is getting older. Hey, rise for the one that crashed. The time warp is fast. Was it a real Is this gonna be alive?